You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. You're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Recording this Monday evening for Tuesday's On the Beat podcast. Of course, On the Beat means Ross Martin and Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina's best beat writers covering North Carolina sports, football, basketball. I'll start with Ross Martin. Ross, let's get into something right out the gate from today's press conferences with Mack Brown and Longo and Jay Bateman. I thought you asked great questions concerning the substitution patterns and how each of those coordinators deal with the talent they have both on the field and on the bench. How do they swap them out? What's the routine and all? Let's start with the offensive side. I think folks need to hear what Longo had to say about how he utilizes, especially his wide receivers. What'd you learn?
Yeah, so I asked this question after looking at the participation report that Ben does every Sunday morning. I think it's kind of – because you don't see that. You don't really see who's getting snaps and how many snaps and the breakdown. So it's definitely a good feature for premium subscribers inside Carolina. And so that's why I asked kind of how they deal with that, because you're seeing them talk about these players, but you're not seeing them play as much. Like Antoine Green's not playing much. Eugene Asante didn't play on Saturday. So I was trying to kind of get an idea of, you know, what's their plan? Is there a plan? Is it just if it's a tight game, the best players play, how they go about rotating players? And I mean, obviously the running backs is pretty simple. They get a kind of equal carry, equal amount of reps and carries as much as they can to make that equal. Wide receivers is a little bit different. I mean, it's clear some of the best players play, but it's a little bit more of an even distribution. They do try to get some rest early and even when in like the second and third quarter. So that when it does matter, when it's a big time play, when it's a big time moment, they can have their best players in there and fresh. But there's also a sense of just the best players playing. You kind of got that sense from talking with Bateman and some of the stuff that Longo said. Offensive line, kind of the same thing. The top guys are playing. They're working in a couple other players. Quarion Johnson got some snaps. Ed Montillis is working in and out. So you're seeing that as well. We kind of just did this interview a couple hours ago. I'm trying to kind of go back and think about exactly what they're saying. I mean, Bateman had a pretty interesting perspective about that. Chaz Surratt and Jeremiah Gilmore are so important to the defense that he can't take them out. I mean, there's times when they're the brains of the operation. So to get Eugene Asante in and Kadri Jackson, it's so tough because of how important Surratt and Gilmore are. And defensive ends have been getting a bit more reps, moving in Hopper and Fox and Dez Evans and Kamen Rucker are getting some reps. And then figuring out spots where they can play certain guys, and if they have success, they can stay in and then give the starters a longer break. And Bateman also talked about using the TV timeouts as an advantage, because there is certainly a lot of time to rest. Greg, I mean, you were there. Did you take anything else away from that? I mean, it's kind of complicated. I'm definitely going to write about it later in the week, and we'll have those quotes up soon.
It's just it's a matter of trust. I mean, we can talk about a lot of different elements. But you've got to have a situation where the players have gained their coach's trust. And on the flip side, the coaches have to really give the players opportunities to gain their trust. You can only do so much in practice. And so it's kind of meeting each other from both directions. And that's a tough thing. But we talked about it all the time last year. And, you know, they really relied on Aaron Crawford and Jason Strobridge until they were out of the coastal race. And at that point is when we saw Jaleel Taylor and Raymond Vahasek's snaps come up. Do you want to get into that situation again, especially in 2020? And especially because that's all Mac talked about this offseason. From March, we have to build depth. You have to have every player in your position group ready to play, because we don't know on game day or until game day who's going to be available. So what Mac said several times this summer is, I don't want to hear any excuses. If you're down four guys in a position group, no excuses. You've known since March that all these guys had to be ready to play. So the coaches know it and the players know it. So there has to be, you know, some give and take there. And you know, it's a lot easier said than done. I'm glad I do not have to make that decision. But we're looking at a stretch here of what, seven straight games without a break. And then you have one opening where you maybe, you know, if there is a break because of COVID, you may have another game slid in there. I mean, you don't have a lot of time to kind of allow guys to grow with bye weeks and those kind of things. And that's why I really thought coming out for that 3-week stretch, everybody that was going to be able to contribute would have gotten enough snaps to be able to rotate them in and out. And we just did not see that on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers here. I mean, Don Chapman, Trey Morrison, Kyle McMichael played every snap on defense. Storm Duck would have, until he went out, he played 72 snaps. The other guys played 81, and Obi Igbuna played 9 snaps, so the 9 that Storm didn't get. So you're asking about why these other players aren't playing, Patrice Rene, Tony Grimes. They're just not up to the standard. They're not trusted right now by the coaching staff, and they would prefer to go with a Storm Duck or McMichael over those guys until they're ready. They feel like there's not much drop off. But you see on the linebackers, the outside linebackers, you know, Kevin Rucker got 21 snaps, and that's, some of those are very important snaps. Chris Collins got 13, Desmond Evans got 10. That's where you see a little bit more, you know, those are some meaningful snaps in there, and 10 is a little bit more significant than you know, 2 or 3. Those are definitely a chunk of snaps that can, that give other guys, Tamon Fox, Tyron Hopper, a breather. So different position groups have different kind of ways they are mixing the reps in and out. So it's kind of interesting to track, and kind of, it shows you who the players that are doing well and which players the coordinators and the coaches trust. Coffrey Brown, for example, got 43 snaps. Bo Corrales got 23. That's kind of interesting to see the outside receivers and the dynamics going on there.
Yeah. And one thing I would say too is, you know, a couple of the names that we heard a lot of in training camp was like Kevin Hester, Christian Varner.
Yeah.
Those guys have combined for 2 snaps in 2 games. You know, Cameron Kelly coming off injury, he's played 13 snaps. Patrice Rene coming off injury, he's played 15 snaps. Even Zach Gill, who Mac Brown and Jay Bateman both praised in training camp, he's played 16 snaps. I don't think he played against Boston College.
He didn't play last week. So, Patrice Rene not playing either. That's crazy.
And so, you know, with North Carolina kind of taking the stance with injuries that Larry Fedora did, and that they're not going to tell us anything until game time, you kind of lead into this discussion of, okay, well, are these guys hurt? Are these guys just not performing as well as the coaches want them to? And so that's going to take a little bit of digging on our part to figure out exactly who's hurt and who's not, to really be able to kind of fill out and answer some of these questions.
Well, Greg, the discussion last year was, you know, is so-and-so at 100% better than Jason Strobridge at 75 or whatever it was. I mean, when you've got Chaz Surratt and Jeremiah Gimmel playing 100% of the game and Asante and Kadre Jackson getting none, that debate gets interesting, especially when you toss in injuries or COVID or whatever else. I mean, they've played 1 of the 7. They've got 6 straight. And if I'm a betting man, I don't think there's any way they play 6 straight weekends. I just don't see it. But right now they're going into Virginia Tech game, possibly down some guys with injury. Jay Bateman says he, if my memory serves, listening to him, he said he trusts everybody. Well, if you trust everybody and you've got 11 guys getting 95% of the snaps, that could be troublesome, couldn't it?
Yeah. You're seeing, like, you know, all the preseason positives, like, oh, we love this guy because the parents are listening, they're listening, and then you really see what they really think during the games.
Right, and that's the big lesson here, right, Ross, is that you know, everybody sounds great. Everybody's made these tremendous strides during the offseason, and every year we buy into it. And we're this team's going to be stacked. All these guys are awesome. And you get a game time, like, wait a minute, he's not even playing. How's he not even playing if he's that good?
And people on the message boards like, why is Tony Grimes not playing? Like, why is he not playing? It's like, dude, he's a high school senior, and it takes a while. But, I mean, I love those freshmen, those breakout stars articles, because they kill on traffic, because people love to read about it.
Right.
People love the hype, love the positives. And in the back of your mind, it's like, dude, there's no way all these guys are going to play.
You showing how some of the sausage is made there, talking
That's
about
right.
the preseason articles. Greg, no injury news. clearly that's the way Saturday mornings and all that kind of stuff is going to be that way. Is that a response to other teams doing it, or is that just something Mac Brown's adopted? Because I don't remember him being that way way back in the day, or even maybe at Texas.
No, you know, the initial plan for UNC under Mac was to kind of be up front and be like, look, on Monday, we'll kind of give you an update. We're not going to tell you specific injuries. We'll tell you upper body, lower body. Then as the week goes along, we'll let you know more details. And as Mac told us on Monday, because other teams are kind of withholding information, like Virginia Tech, for example, what they released before the game against Duke is that they had, I think, 21 players out due to COVID, two coaches, but didn't provide names. And so I think Mac's point is kind of like Larry's was. It's like, look, you know, I don't want to give anything away if they're not going to, you know, tell us who they've got out. And that, you know, we can get into a lot of discussion about that. But, you know, when we said when North Carolina under Mac kind of announced their original plan, we're like, look, you know, this is kind of an indication that if you can coach your guys up and get them playing at a high level, you don't have to play some of these injury games necessarily. And that's, I really think that you need an injury report plan set up nationally. You know, they talked about it a couple years ago. Fedora was against it. But especially now that you have your gambling is going to be taking over in full force, if it's not already in college athletics, you know, you risk the possibility of getting some of these kids in trouble, kind of hiding information from would-be gamblers and from whoever else. So I think I'm always a fan, and granted, I'm a reporter, so this is kind of what I do. I'm always a fan of more information, more transparency. You know, I know UNC made a big deal about being transparent coming out of the NCAA mess, so I think that's a good plan. But when other teams aren't following that message, you can understand why Mac's doing it, but I'm not a fan of it. And so it just means we have to dig more on our end. And that's one of the things, you know, watching the game the other night, Jordan Tucker came off. He was hobbling. I think it was his right leg. He didn't come back in the game. That's not a good sign. Storm Duck did not come off, you know, come back into the game. Well, they were looking at his foot. I don't think Raymond Bohosik came in and Connolly did not come in. So that's four important names right there that we don't exactly know if they're going to be available. And so if they're not available, that is a game-changing situation for UNC this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, with Tech, Virginia Tech, it's the COVID stuff. They had – I was talking to a Virginia Tech reporter last night, and they had everybody but one in the two deep on their defensive backs not play against Duke. So only one player in their two deep, the starting two, be played against Duke, true freshman, Keonta Jenkins. So they were hit hard, and they continue to be hit hard against Duke. So we'll see what happens against Carolina. They may get some of those guys back, but there's a two-week quarantine situation if you contract COVID. So
yeah, I think it's a 10-day now in the ACC, but yeah.
Same. So the players that were out against Duke could still be out against UNC, depending on when they get back. I mean, the defensive coordinator hasn't – I don't think he's called a play yet. He's missed the last two games, yeah, to my knowledge.
Crazy times, 2020. We'll talk about North Carolina's defense after the break. But let's talk about the another big key word from Monday's press conferences. And, Greg, I'll start your way again, patience on offense. I think Jason Staples and I, and you maybe were in on the conversation, if Sam Howell would just take the free stuff, he could light it up all day. Can't argue really with his stats, but it appears he is not taking the free stuff. And in that, let's wrap Daz Newsome into that as well, because I think Daz may be some of the free stuff underneath. Greg, your thoughts on that patience factor, maybe with Sam Howell and the deep ball and all that?
Well, I think one way to kind of look at it is when you look at Daz Newsome and De'Ami Brown last year were both 1,000-yard receivers, right? And you look at their targets this year, Daz Newsome has been targeted six times, and Brown has been targeted 17 times. That's quite the discrepancy. And I really do think that, you know, this offseason, I wrote about this on Sunday, but this offseason we talked about, okay, well, how does Sam Howell get better? And everybody came around to the point of, hey, you know, if he can just use his feet more and scramble some, which is what we saw in the first half, his game will explode because now they have something else to have to defend, right? You have to wonder how much that confidence comes into play, that everything, I want to say, it was easy, but it looked easy last year for Sam. and some of the great passes that he made down the field time and time again. And so, you know, when a defense is frustrating you, it's got to be pretty tempting to say, you know what, I can throw this deep ball. I can get on down the field. We have a 70-yard touchdown, and we can kind of smack this team around. And when that doesn't happen, that's when frustration sets in. And so what you see, and I think kind of a big point here, he's played 15 games. He's been sacked 43 times, right? Not good at math. That's almost three times a game. That's too many. I mean, you know, a sack, a drive, most of the time is going to force you to punt. And so you're talking about maybe a quarter of your drives are kind of, you know, damaged that way. But it really is just a situation. You could see it against Boston College. There are opportunities underneath. But he was willing to kind of wait in the pocket a little bit too long and move around a little bit too much, trying to find something to open up down the field. And what happens, he's 0 for 5 on deep passes, you know, 20 yards or more, and you know, didn't have a great day. Did he have a good day? Yeah, of course. But we're expecting, you know, greater things out of Sam. And so when you're focused so much on down the field, that's why, you know, as I said, Newsom's had 6 targets all year. Garrett Walston, who we all praised after the Syracuse game because he did such a good job, he's had 2 targets all year. Mm. Josh Downs, 2 targets. Toe Groves has 2 targets. And he has a target. He had a target on Saturday because Boston College didn't account for him. And he was running, you know, 20 yards wide open on the left side of the field. So Sam had to throw it to him. And so those are the ones that you have to take. That was kind of a good example, is there are opportunities. Guys don't have to be wide open to throw it underneath. But when you have a guy like Daz, who is a punt returner and a very good one when given the opportunity, if you give him the ball 5 or 10 yards down the field, see what he can do. You know, it's what Ryan Switzer did forever. We always talked about Larry Fedora's offense was short passes, long gains. And Sam is not employing that. And that's one of the criticisms of the air raid, is that there's so much focus on forcing the ball down the field. You don't necessarily take advantage of a lot of that stuff over the middle with the mesh routes and the crossing routes. And that's all he's got to do. Once he does that, you have to come up and defend it. And that's when you get some of those opportunities down the field.
One thing, you know, obviously the defenses are playing back a little bit and you're getting more too deep with safeties and they're covering that deep ball, but also they're holding the ball more. They're running the ball more. They're trying to keep the ball away from Sam Howell in the offense. They're getting less. Both, I think Phil mentioned it and Jay Bateman mentioned it, that the offense is getting less snaps per game than last year already. You're already seeing the strategy that the defenses are using to kind of slow down Sam Howell, Phil Longo, and the UNC offense. So two different things that they're employing after watching tape, like we read in Greg's article, for 13 games and seeing what they can do to stop Sam after such a good season last year.
Well, watching Jerkovic, I mean, he knew where his safety valve was on every play.
Yeah.
Am I missing something, Greg? This is something that's important being there. Are we missing that availability for Sam Howell? I mean, because every time Jerkovic got in trouble, he knew he could throw it to a spot on the field. He had a running back waiting for it.
Right. And that's where the patience comes in, because you have to have, all right, I've got this option and this option. And then I either have a hot route, right, if they're going to blitz or they're going to get to me, or I need to have a safety blanket, which is what Hunter Long was for Jerkovic. And there's no indication that Sam has that. And now, is that a matter of chemistry? Is that a matter of game plan? Is it a matter of not having a talented option, whether it be at tight end or, we know he likes Daz because Daz had such a good year last year. Those are all good questions. And I don't exactly know what the answer is, but you know, Zach Pianalto, for example, Eric Ebron, you know, these are talented tight ends that North Carolina has had over the years, who could give you big plays, but more importantly, you know, they're possession receivers. You know, Quinshon Davis played that role. Just go out and do a 10-yard out. It's easy first down when you need it. But if North Carolina has a 3rd and 7, who's the guy that Sam's going to go to time and time again to get those 8 yards? And I don't know that we have that answer right now.
Ross, you know, you would think Bo Corrales is a guy that plays that role for North Carolina. You mentioned, what'd you say, 23 snaps in the Boston College game, which was a little surprising, but the thing that made it so tough for Carolina to deal with Jerkovic, you know what I'm talking about, the Boston College quarterback, is Greg, even on the sack where he was getting sacked, he threw it in the direction of the running back because he knew his guy was going to be there. I just think that's something Carolina needs to have available for Howell. But as Jason Staples said on the Day After podcast, it's hard to get guys to coach guys away from doing what they're used to having success. And that's part of the growth. That's part of the maturity and all that stuff. Even somebody as good as Sam Howell can certainly get better in that regard. Ross, you got anything to add on the offensive side of the ball before we take a break, go talk defense?
Hey, I think UNC has two great running backs, and I think that's the strength of the team right now. And they need to pound the rock and find ways to get those two guys in space. Cause I think, I mean, I don't know if there's a better 1-2 duo in the ACC or in college football with Michael Carr and Javonte Williams at both number one backs, both like, you know, bell cow type backs. And so things aren't happening. Dump it down to Carter, Javonte in the flat and give those guys a little bit of space and see if they can get 4, 5, 6 yards per run, which you think they would. Cause essentially the passing game to your running backs is an extension of the running game in the air raid offense. And we've talked about how multi-dimensional this UNC offense is in terms of skill positions, and they have two great running backs. So that should be, and they've been using them. They've had two great games. So that's just another point about there's multiple ways to attack defenses for Phil Longo and the offense.
Yep. Doesn't have to be all flash. It can be just dink and dunk. It'll work, especially like you mentioned, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams. Those guys have been fantastic their entire careers at North Carolina, really. Let's talk about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com. Of course, great sponsors of Inside Carolina's podcast and friends of Inside Carolina. Get all sorts of gear from Johnny T-Shirt, both online and in store. Many sales. Any sales you can imagine, they come up, and especially as Ross always talks about, the holidays are coming up soon. And so get your gear and get that order in so you get the gear delivered straight to your door, or go see them in person. Throwback jerseys, basketball, football, tailgating, homeware, office wear, man cave stuff, anything you need. Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com, and 10% off your everyday order if you're an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber, which I'm not sure how you could not be these days. Take another short break. Let the national guys pay the bills. We'll be right back.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're back. This is the Inside Carolina podcast on the beat with Greg Barnes and Ross Martin. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. Rate us, review us, subscribe, all that. Make sure you do it and do it quickly. All right. I know I've been going to Greg. Ross, I got to call Greg out, though. I've gone to Greg multiple times. But, Greg, even Jay Bateman calls you out, man. Even Jay Bateman calls you out for that Boston College pick. But I will tell you this. The entire time watching that Boston College game, I was sitting there thinking, that damn Greg Barnes is going to be right.
Well, look, first of all, I want to thank Jay for tuning in to the preseason podcast. It's important for us to have North Carolina football coaches that tune in and listen to our insight. You know, if we can provide any kind of help to the coaching staff, that's what we aim to do. So that's a good thing. Secondly, I mean, let's be honest. Point spread at kickoff was 15. If you're a gambler, easy money. I mean, it's taking candy from a baby, right? I mean, the idea that North Carolina was going to be favored on the road by 15, that's a bit much. That's, I think, some big, heavy bettors took advantage of that with people getting inflated opinions of what North Carolina was going to do. But hey, you know what? The other part, too, I'll give you number three, Tommy, since we're on this topic. The point of a preseason podcast is to have fun with it, right? Anybody, my nine-year-old daughter, can look at stats and she can look at projections and say, well, I'm going to pick chalk, right? That's easy to do. You don't have to have any kind of football knowledge for that. So we have to live. You have to be creative and take chances, right? Roll the dice a little bit. And so you know what? If I got to take some heat for that, I'm happy to do it.
Did anybody pick any upsets similar to that? I wasn't invited on the preseason podcast.
Oh, here we go. In the feelings.
Actually. I don't like to
Buck and I. Like Buck and I think both picked FSU, and I think we're both going to be embarrassed come October 17th.
7 p.m. kick. That's gonna be on national TV. That's gonna be a.
I mean, if you don't give me heat for picking Boston College, you should destroy me and Buck for picking Florida State, because that is proven to be a very, very poor pick.
Looks like they finally got their quarterback, though. They named that whoever that was that started for him or played for him last week.
Yeah,
I don't know. I didn't watch enough of that. Jackson State. Florida State is a mess. And Greg, you could have told him to go thank number four for delivering the win. But anyway, Ross, defensive side of the ball. Jay Bateman said a couple things in that press conference that sort of caught me off guard, and I don't think they'll have to worry about it against Virginia Tech, is they were surprised what Boston College did. Assumed Boston College would try to pound it. Well, Virginia Tech's going to try to pound it. Your takeaways from Bateman's presser on Monday?
General question. Yeah, I mean, Bateman thought that they would use the BC running back and pound it more. Surprised how much they threw it. They had success throwing it. So I think they had to adjust on the fly to kind of scheme that up, and that might have resulted in how much success that Boston College had throwing the ball, and it seemed like they could kind of pick apart UNC's secondary. But UNC's run defense remains stout. That's something we've noticed. I think top 10 in yards per carry, and that's going to kind of be the talking point this week. Is Virginia Tech has a really good running back and a really experienced offensive line. Bateman talked about, you know, the guys they saw last year on the offensive line. They've all, you know, all stayed. They all a year more experience. Khalil Herbert is the running back. Is he a Kansas transfer? Is that what I heard?
Correct.
Yep.
Greg, yeah. I mean, he's killing it. I think he's number one in the nation. Is that right? I'm kind of going on a whim here with some of these stats, but
he's averaging 12.4 yards per carry.
Yeah, two games and 312 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, he's beasting it. And I was talking to Norm Wood yesterday. He's a beat writer for Virginia Tech, and he said this offensive line is nasty. So we'll see how good this UNC defensive line is. You got Ravo Hasek, who went out for Carolina. You got Tamari Fox, who played every snap. You don't have those huge big bodies you would like for the run defense. Maybe we'll see more of Zach Gill, maybe a couple of the younger guys, maybe some more Miles Murphy. And you maybe see less of this, so the outside linebackers, defensive ends lining up. So you may see a little bit different defensive front, but you do have Chad Surratt and Jeremiah Gimmel, who, you know, Bateman's raved about, and you can see how intelligent those guys are in diagnosing blocking schemes, diagnosing the run things, and Chad Surratt's been excellent in getting off blocks and making plays. So it's you know, two immovable forces coming together. We'll see what happens with the run attack of Virginia Tech versus the run defense of UNC.
And one thing, Tommy, that we talked about last couple weeks with Miles Wolfolk being suspended and kicked off the team, is, you know, what does Jay Bateman do? You know, do you play an extra guy up front, or do you put in Conley? Well, Conley didn't start at nickelback. They didn't start a nickelback. And Mack Brown touched on that today, that because Boston College has this big offensive lineman, Jay Bateman was scheming to expect the run game more so than what BC has shown. And so if you look early in that game, North Carolina was playing with five defensive linemen on the line of scrimmage. Or five guys on the line of scrimmage. They weren't all defensive linemen. But Kamon Rucker was the guy that went in to give them the fifth guy up front. And we saw that several times in the first couple possessions. And then they figured out, you know what, Boston College is not even going to try to run. So we're going to go back to what we typically do. And so I think that kind of gives you a little bit of a tell of what we can expect. Does that mean that Jay's going to do the exact same thing? No, it doesn't. But the fact that he was willing to take that approach, and as Ross said, when you have a guy or guys like Chaz Surratta and Jeremiah Gimel who are so fast laterally on that second level, I mean, Chase, he ran down several of those little swing passes and stopped them short for nothing when they looked like they could be big gains for Boston College. So when you have guys that can move that quickly on the second level, you can put an extra body up front. And so that will be interesting to see if that's what Jay does again this weekend.
Greg, I slacked you while you were talking. You hadn't had a chance to look it up. Virginia Tech runs for what, 300 plus a game? Wonder how many times non-service academies have run for 300 yards in a game and not won. That'll be homework for the game plan podcast.
I mean, yeah, you have to take Georgia Tech out of that equation. But if you take Georgia Tech out, any of those triple option teams, probably not very often. We talk about it all the time, and this has been something that Buck has harped on since I've known him, and for good reason. And Mac touched on it today. Whoever runs the ball the best and whoever wins the turnover battle, if you do those two things, your chances of winning go through the roof. That doesn't guarantee you're going to win, but that's going to put you in position to win. And it's the NC State-UNC thing for the longest time, last 20 years. Basically, whoever rushed for the most yardage in that game won. And I don't know what that is has been the last couple of years, but that was something we always focused on. So that's a critical component.
And we don't know who's going to be the quarterback for Virginia Tech. I mean, Braxton Burmeister, who's a transfer from Oregon. I believe. Yeah. He started against Duke, but against State, Quincy Patterson and Burmeister played. Hendon Hooker has come back from injury. He may be healthy against UNC. So you have three quarterbacks, and it's going to be, you know, it's just more work to kind of game plan and watch tape of all three to see their tendencies and everything. It's kind of crazy that Virginia Tech is it's got three games against three triangle teams back to back to back.
And Burmeister he's carried the ball two fewer times than Herbert. So, I mean, granted, Herbert's running for 12 yards a clip, so you don't have to run him much. But the fact that the Burmeister has run that much, and he's quick. He had a good run against Duke for a touchdown. So he's a much faster option than what Carolina has played thus far, because DeVito nor Dracovic, neither of those guys are big runners, big, strong guys, but not fast.
What's crazy is this Burmeister guy played behind Justin Herbert at Oregon. That's why he transferred, and now he's in Virginia Tech as a starting quarterback, and Herbert's killing it for the Chargers.
You got Patterson too, Greg, and that Patterson, when did he come in last season? When did Hooker go out against Carolina? It was in the third quarter last year and Patterson came in?
Hooker came in, in second quarter, I believe, and he's the one that rallied them to take the lead at halftime, and then I think Hooker got hurt in the second half and Patterson came in.
Yep. So Virginia
Tech had three quarterbacks played last year, and you could see as many as three play this weekend.
Ross, secondary injuries, one of our topics for today. Connolly's got some sort of injury, looked like a lower body type thing. Storm Duck, folks are all over the place. It looked like a foot to me in the way they were treating it. Who knows what it is? It did not look good either way. I said it earlier. Bateman said he trusts all his guys. I guess we'll find out Saturday, Greg. Who steps in for Storm Duck?
Like how Tommy prefaced me and then went to Greg. Hey, Greg can take it. Obi Igbuna, if Storm can't go, Obi Igbuna is the guy that Bateman seemed to trust the most over Patrice Rene and over Tony Grimes.
Didi, right?
Oh, yeah. And why is his name changed like three times since we're – I just call him DeAndre Hollins.
Yeah.
Ross or Greg, it's all the same.
Yeah. So that secondary room is getting smaller and smaller. First you lose Miles Wolfolk, you lost DJ Ford, you lost the Virginia Tech transfer
Bryce Watts,
Javon Terry, you lost Bryson Richardson, who would be maybe your starting nickelback if Ja'Quarius Conley couldn't go. So there's a couple movements now if Conley and the Duck can't go. Now we don't know what's happening here. We'll find out maybe this week, but for sure on Saturday. But Storm Duck's your best cornerback, maybe your second best behind Kyler McMichael, and definitely a guy they value and who's had two good games. And then Conley was just getting his feet wet in his first start. So there's definitely some concern. I think there's some concerns now with depth, because now you're getting to guys who haven't really played much. You're not getting into that too deep. You're moving in players you're moving in Obi, you're moving in, you know, maybe like a into Cam Kelly, you know, guys like that who could be playing more now if things get reorganized. You remember Trey Morrison, he could play anywhere. So it kind of gives you a nice Swiss Army kind of knife piece there.
Nice segue to Greg. Does Trey Morrison stay at safety? He looked fantastic against Boston College, Greg, but is he better as safety than, say, a Cam Kelly maybe, if Kelly's healthy?
That's the question, right? Because if you'd asked me that question, however many days ago the season started, a month ago, I would have said, you know, if you have no more options at corner or nickel, then, yeah, of course you would move Trey Morrison back. Just because we all thought that Chapman and Kelly and Wolfolk were all kind of interchangeable pieces. But what we saw at Boston College is that either Cam Kelly, they don't trust him to that extent yet. He's still coming back from that injury, or maybe if he's nicked up or something. And so that's a big question mark. If Kelly is capable and willing to go, ready to go, I assume that they would feel better moving Trey Morrison back to nickel. But to Ross's point, the fact that he can play so many different positions is very beneficial for Jay Bateman. And you really say, okay, we have to get our best five on the field in the secondary.
Yeah.
Trey Morrison's one of those five. So who are these other guys that can step up and play? And the fact that, as Ross laid out, so many injuries at safety. Now we're talking about injuries potentially at cornerback and nickelback. Your options are whittling down very quickly. And who would have thought, 2 months ago that we'd be having this conversation?
So let me ask the question that's going to be on the board every week. Any chance anybody opts back in? I saw somebody opt back in for some P5 school on Twitter earlier today. Greg, is that even a remote possibility for North Carolina? I have to ask.
You know, that's a good question. I don't think so. I think once they opt out, it's pretty much done. And I assume that's probably on a case-by-case basis by schools. But, you know, to my knowledge, you know, there was really never an indication that once these guys opted out, they can come back in. You can opt out. It's not going to affect your status, anything like that. But I think that's not going to be the case. I know we talked about before, there's an offensive lineman a couple of years ago that had left the program, and they let him come back just because they needed him. They needed the numbers. And so that's a unique situation.
What was that guy's name?
Was that Cohen?
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. It was Cohen. That's right. He's working at Home Depot or something, right?
It's not even funny. That's a good job.
Oh yeah, he was. He's actually kind of left the sport and was.
Yeah, I think it was Dick's Sporting Goods. I think it was Dick's Sporting Goods actually. Right. I was gonna add. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like once the season starts, you can't hop back. I mean,
But they're doing it elsewhere, right? They're doing.
Oh yeah, I think Michigan players opt back in. Like definitely players opt back in. And I don't know what's happened elsewhere, but like from a team perspective, like we busted our ass for 9 weeks. We did the preseason workouts, we did all this stuff, and you're going to come back in and now play, and now you're all good. Like, I don't know. That just doesn't work when you talk about team concept. And I don't know. I just don't think – I think they could use these guys, but I'm not sure if it's the best situation for the team and everything. Like, Bryce Watts comes in and takes a starting job and Tony Grimes, you know, skipped his prom to come help y'all out, that type of deal.
Valid points. I think at some point you got to have bodies the way right this season's going. They've played two games thus far, and that packed DB room is down to six healthy bodies, maybe seven. Yeah, anyway,
Greg's got his Sunday Tiger Woods hat on.
Yeah, really? Where's the red shirt?
That's right. I need my
clay shirt.
Is it Foo Fighters again? Did you wash that? Did you wash the Foo Fighters shirt?
Oh yeah.
All right, boys, anything else that we have not covered? It's a big week for North Carolina. Do we think Carolina's a top 10 team realistically, or are they a top 20 team? Ross, I know what the polls say.
Well, I think when you add in Big Ten gets cooking and Pac-12 gets cooking, they're probably more of a top 15 team. But, I mean, you're as good as your record. So, I mean, they have what, six or seven winnable games up until they play Notre Dame and Miami. That's one of the really, really tough games. So, this will be a big test. I mean, this will be a really big test. And it's unfortunate that they're going to have some injuries, but I think Virginia Tech does as well.
All right, Greg, make some more bulletin board material before we get out of here. What should Carolina be ranked?
Oh, Lord. It is, you know, it's one of those things – watching this team the first two games, you're like, ah, it's not a top 10 team. But then you watch some of these other teams, and you're like, maybe they are. And I think it's just the 2022. I don't think we're going to know anything about any of these teams really till we get into late October. And then we'll have a pretty good idea of who's great. I mean, Alabama looks really good. Clemson looks really good. Go figure. Who would ever thought that? And then a lot of these other teams are, okay, maybe. They have some strengths. They have some weaknesses. I just think it's too early. I mean, like Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's numbers, given what they've dealt with COVID, you'd be like, wow. And Mac made the point. He was like, I think they're completely underrated. And I think this is one of the fallacies of early preseason rankings. I don't disagree with him with the fallacy of early preseason rankings or early season rankings. But then you look at some of their, like, I mean, what Burmeister has done passing the ball, it's not impressive. I mean, he was not good at all against Duke throwing the ball. So there's some deficiencies there. I think you can nitpick most of these teams. I think we're weeks away from being able to get a firm handle on who's legitimately top 10 teams.
I think this weekend, I think UNC is going to be able to pass the ball with ease, especially if the secondary, Virginia Tech secondary, has anybody out with COVID. And then I think Virginia Tech's going to have some ease running the ball. So you'll see two different types of offenses going. And I think UNC can run the ball too. So that might play to the Tar Heels' advantage. And what was the spread?
Well, it started off at Saturday? 7 and it dropped.
Yeah, 7 and it was 5. It was 5 on Sunday.
And Greg,
what game was that?
Carolina, Virginia Tech. You know, like the Inside Carolina thing we're talking about here.
The game Saturday?
Coming up game, Virginia Tech, UNC.
I thought it was 3.5.
It was started at 7 and then it was 5. I don't know what it is now.
Oh, I saw somebody on the board post 3.5, so I just assumed that the board information was correct.
Yeah, I believe everything I read on the message boards too.
I typically do. Hang on 1 second so I don't sound like a fool. Yeah, it started at 7, now it's down to 5. You guys are right. Well, I'm even questioning you.
Hey, I just want to win my $41.99.
I spent it well. Spent it well.
All right, Pete Rose there. All right, Inside Carolina Podcast. You've been listening to it on the beat. Ross Martin, Greg Barnes, Johnny T-Shirt, and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Thanks, boys.
All right, see you guys.
Yep, rate us, review us on Apple iTunes. Got to get it in. Subscribe on YouTube, all that good stuff. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.